The Women of Ill Repute, with your hosts, Wendy Mesley and Maureen Holloway.
So, Mo, would you rather have critical acclaim or mass appeal?
Well, both, I would think.
No, you got to pick one. You can only have one.
You can't be critically acclaimed and the people love you as well.
Yeah, but for the purposes of this discussion, let's get real. Would you rather win an Oscar or a People's Choice Award?
Oh, well, an Oscar for sure. I've had my speech written since I was a kid. And also, I don't think the people should be given a choice. They never make the right one.
Okay, well, that's another discussion. I do want to hear that speech, though.
Don't worry, I thank you in it. You're right there.
Okay, well, that's all I wanted to know. So you know what? I think that we should ask the question about critical acclaim and all of that to Ron Sexsmith. He's one of the most highly regarded singer-songwriters in the world. His music has been performed by the likes of Rod Stewart, Feist, Emmylou Harris.
He is admired by Paul McCartney and Elvis Costello and Dylan and Cillian Murphy, who's an actor who's going to win an Oscar, is a big fan. And Ron's been compared to Gordon Lightfoot, to Roy Orbison, but he's still not a household name.
Well, kind of depends on the household, but yeah, a lot of households. So Ron Sexsmith, he lives in Stratford now with his family, with his wife. He gave up the bright lights of Toronto, whatever. And he's got a new album out called The Vivian Line. And he's playing a concert at Massey Hall that's celebrating his career as he turns 60.
Are we doing things that we don't understand? I can feel the motion of our father's hand.
Oh, 60. He's a spring chicken. I actually know Ron best because I follow him on Twitter and he makes the most awful puns. Awful in a good way. This is just from this morning. He posted, "Searching for the fountain of youth, that never gets old."
That's pretty bad.
Wait, he's got another one here. He said, "You should be friends with a giraffe because you know they'll always stick their neck out for you."
Okay, that's worse.
Ron Sexsmith, everybody. Happy birthday. Congratulations. And shame on you for those terrible puns.
Thank you. I mean, my birthday was actually in January, same day as Elvis Presley, of all people. But, you know, Twitter for me is just, I never wanted anything to do with it. And my label talked me into it about, I guess, 2012 or something. And, you know, I had these dumb thoughts always occur to me. And finally, I had an outlet to just sort of unleash them on the world because I didn't really know what else you're supposed to do with Twitter. Most people, they take pictures of what they had for dinner or something like that. So, but it's weird because when I started, I only had about 600 followers. And now just from doing these stupid jokes, and I do other things as well. I upload videos and things, but now it's grown to, I think, like about 64,000 or something. So
amazing.
Yeah. So there's something to be said for the, you know, a good dad joke every day or something.
Well, we both follow you.
Yeah. You're the king of the dad jokes. That's exactly the kind of humor. And it's kind of coincided with your emergence on Twitter. So congratulations.
If only writing songs were as easy. Just Twitter.
Well, it's all, you know, in a way, it's all writing, though. It's all wordplay. It's all I do, you know. And I think we're probably around the same age, but I always love the, you know, the Dean Martin roasts and all these sort of things and this, you know, the one-liners and Bob Hope. And so I'm keeping that alive, really. I feel like I'm, especially during COVID, I went into overdrive on Twitter because I felt I wanted to be like Bob Hope, entertaining the troops, you know, trying to keep morale up. And so that's what I try to do, you know, and it's a nasty place sometimes.
It is a nasty place, but likewise, I did a newsletter during the, I called it Postcards from the Pandemic, and basically shared recipes, like completely different from anything I would normally do. But I still have people who tell me, oh, you should do those Postcards from the Pandemic again. And I was, well, the pandemic's over, so that would be kind of
Were you making sourdough bread too, like everybody else?
I tried. Somebody sent me some starter, but it never got off the ground.
And got a dog. I know so many people who got a dog. Everybody did the sourdough thing, but they also got dogs. I didn't do anything except kind of enjoy and then really not enjoy the COVID experience.
My whole thing was trying to get better on the piano, which I played a lot. And because I'm sort of a late starter on the piano. And I was just so lucky to not be in Toronto when it was going on, because in Stratford, I could walk around the river. I felt like I had space and I could look at swans and things like that, you know.
So had you just moved to Stratford just pre-pandemic?
A few years prior. We moved in January of 2017. So we had a couple, you know, a few years of kind of bliss, you know. And actually, COVID in Stratford wasn't so bad because we were allowed to bubble with, five people at one point. And that was pretty much our entire social scene, you know. So we just kept drinking and everything and hanging out. And it just seemed to, before you knew it, I mean, it was, I guess it's still swirling around, but it feels almost normal again. But I'm probably wrong about that. So.
Well, you were born in St. Catharines, and then you were in Toronto for all of these years, and you've toured the whole world and everything. And now you're in Stratford. So this is a big Mo thing. She always asks me, so are you happy? Are you happy now in Stratford?
Well, Wendy moved away as well. She moved to the county, and there's a whole wave of people, not just pandemically induced, but I mean, maybe it's the age too.
You moved to Prince Edward County?
Yeah, so Prince Edward County, and I try and ski. Let's not go there with Maureen because she had a bad fall. But yeah, I mean, you're in Stratford, so you've talked about the swans. Like, you're like happy as a country boy now?
Yeah, I mean, my wife was the brains behind that because we couldn't afford a house in Toronto, so we were renting, and we felt like we're in a real perilous situation. Our landlord was getting very old and we were worried if he died, what happens to us? You know, do we get the boot? And so, and Colleen was working for Lorena McKenna at the time. And so she was coming here a lot and I would come with her and she was trying to get me to warm up to the idea. But, you know, I finally caved in, but it was the best thing we ever did because I was really starting to feel out of place in Toronto. I'm starting to feel like the old guy at the bar, you know, and all of a sudden here in Stratford, I feel like the young guy at the bar, you know, it's because everybody's so old here, you know, but I love the theater. I love there's a chef colony here. So the food's really good. And when I walk the town, I feel like Huckleberry Finn, you know, because in Toronto, you know, everyone walks around with a coffee in their hand and the traffic's going and it's just a whole other headspace. And I didn't even realize I needed it, but I think I was going a bit insane in Toronto. So it was really nice to get out and have a fresh start and, you know, my early 50s. So
we just talked to Lorena not too long ago, and I think this is going to start make a few people think about moving to Stratford because she sings the same praises, theater, food, more inclusive. Toronto's a tough place to live, no matter how old you are.
And my kids are in Toronto and I wish they would sort of look elsewhere too, because it's so, yeah, I mean, the rents, I mean, you can go on all day about, I mean, it's a great town and I was so glad I was able to get there and, you know, make my dreams come true or whatever. But yeah, it's not every day, you know, you get to start over in a new place and we have all these new friends, people that I never would have met in Toronto, you know, because I mostly hung out with musicians and the musicians are jerks mostly, you know, so it was really nice to be, you know, meet people from other walks of life, you know.
Speaking of dreams, you used to hang out at Massey Hall and now you're playing there. I mean, you've played there before, but it's kind of a big deal. I mean, it's Massey Hall is a big deal.
Well, for me, it's the biggest deal, you know. You know, when I was working as a courier, it was on my route, actually. So I'd walk by Massey Hall quite a bit. And I had no money at all back then. And so there were many shows where I would just go and stand by the stage door and listen, except for Lightfoot. I would go see Lightfoot every year. And that was my favorite thing to do. So when I finally played there in 2006, it was just crazy, you know, to be backstage and because I'd seen Dylan and Leonard Cohen and all these people. And there's a real sense of kind of rising to the occasion or wanting to do that. And it's funny because I've also headlined the Royal Albert Hall, which was crazy. But even so, Massey Hall still kind of, for me, takes the cake because, you know, it's sort of our Royal Albert Hall in a way, you know. So this will be the fifth time that I've headlined it. And it's not an easy venue to book because it's expensive and it's big and all this stuff. So I, you know, I mean, this could be the last time I play there, but I really felt for this show that it needed to be there.
Well, and Gordon Lightfoot, he was a big fan of yours and all the people that you mentioned.
All the people you idolize you.
Well, Lightfoot was always, I don't know if he was a fan of mine. I mean, he was very nice to me. You know, I think how it is, like when you, I'm sure he met so many people over the years who worshipped him. You don't always want to meet those people, you know. A couple of times I sat beside him at events, like award shows and that. And I just felt really privileged to, and like I say, I don't know if he knew any of my music or anything. I mean, he did come to my very first Massey Hall show. And that was definitely on the top 10 of the biggest honors I've ever received, you know. So I'm really lucky I got to sort of hang with him on a few occasions because he wasn't easy to get to know, you know. I mean, he was a kind of a private, very private person. And I think he had very few close friends, Gord. You know, but some of those other people you mentioned, yeah, they've said nice things and all that.
Like Bob Dylan, we've kind of heard of him.
Yeah,
and Paul McCartney.
And Elvis Costello, whom you've always reminded, I mean, one of my favorites, certainly one of the world's favorite singer-songwriters, and he was instrumental in raising your star.
More than anyone else, Elvis saved my career because, I've told the story before, but my album came out, my debut in 95, only in North America, and the label hated it, so they weren't promoting it. And I'd spent that whole year touring around, opening for people, nobody really caring. And they were about to drop me when Elvis Costello, he held my album up on the cover of a magazine, changed everything.
In the UK?
Yeah, in the UK. And I hadn't even met him yet. And I didn't see it coming. And it was kind of like, I don't want to say like sweet revenge or anything, but after a whole year of the label telling me my record was crappy and I blew my first big shot at the record, to finally have all of a sudden a guy like that. And not only that, but all these, the world press, you know, I made it on so many year-end lists of that year of best albums and things. So it really gave me a leg to stand on. And all of 1996, I spent touring England and Australia and Japan. And it would be about my, I guess, probably by my fourth album before anyone in Canada paid any attention to me.
It's so odd. I mean, you're huge in Ireland. And yet, you know, it's not like we have so many.
I'm physically huge in Ireland. I'm sort of bigger than everyone else. No, I do very well in Ireland. I don't think I'm huge anywhere. I sort of have a cult following everywhere. You know, but obviously wherever I go, I can fill a room, whatever, but I'm not playing enormous rooms. But yes, Ireland and the UK are among my sort of biggest markets.
Yeah. On the Elvis thing, because we were there, didn't he say something to the effect of you're too low key for your own good?
Yeah, I can't really help that though. I mean, you know, Elvis in his early days projected this image as kind of almost angry, you know, machine gun sort of delivery he had. But he's a real softy, actually, you know. I mean, he was a fan of, and his dad was a jazz crooner, you know, so he loved all that kind of stuff. And he loved a lot of the Canadian folk music as well. So I think he really responded to what I was doing. I never would have thought he would have liked my stuff. So I was pretty surprised. And what was the original question?
Well, just about you being too low-key. I mean, you are a shy guy, but you said something about you're not going to change.
I guess I'm probably a little bit low key. Maybe it's part of the Canadian makeup or something. You know, I mean, it used to be anyway. I don't know that the Weekend is low key. I'm not sure. But I mean, you know, I remember when my second album came out, I called it Other Songs. And I remember Elvis telling me he thought the title was too low key or too humble or something. But I didn't mean it that way. I sort of, for me, like, you know, Leonard Cohen's albums were called Songs from a Room or Recent Songs. And so when I called my second album Other Songs, I just thought it was in the spirit of like Leonard Cohen. I wasn't trying to be like, you know, bashful about it or anything. And, you know, of course, years later, I have an album called Exit Strategy of the Soul, you know, which is like, you know, pretty elaborate, I think. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it is part of the Canadian thing. You know, we're in between two very dominant cultures. You know, you've got the America and the UK that make a bigger noise than we do in a way. And, you know, I think that's where my music lies, is somewhere between the British invasion and the Canadian folk. And if I have a sound, that's where it is.
I was going to ask a very crass question.
Yes.
And it has more to do with the industry. So as if you're a singer and a songwriter, your songs have been covered. Is that lucrative for you? That's the crass part of it.
No.
Is it the songwriting aspect of when somebody, you know, who's got a marquee name covers it, does that go farther to pay the bills?
Well, it definitely helps. I mean, I've never had the big hit. I mean, there's so many songwriters, like the guy that wrote the big hit for Norah Jones, for example, he made millions and millions, you know, and I never had that hit. You know, when Rod Stewart covered my song Secret Heart, it wasn't a hit either for him, but it helped me recoup my first publishing deal, which was nice. You know, we live largely on, publishing advances. You know, I've been with Sony for quite a number of years, and it's weird. Like during the pandemic, I actually ended up recouping. I don't know how that happened. So I was able to get another advance, but I think we do okay. I've never been in a situation where I felt, well, I don't ever have to work again. You know, I always have to keep plugging away. But I'm lucky that I got in the door when I did. I don't know how anybody does it now. I wouldn't know how to begin. I can't even get the Zoom working on my computer, you know. So I'm very lucky. And also, I mean, I had a record called Late Bloomer, but I really was a late bloomer because my first album didn't come out until I was 31, which is old for the music industry. You know, it's like 300 and dog years or whatever it is, you know. So anyway, I just had this crazy dream and I never gave up on it. And finally, they let me in, you know.
Hey there. Just so you know, Mo and I are not just the queens of podcasting.
I'm not sure we're even that, but do go on.
We're not part-time cowgirls.
We just made that up.
But we are writers. We're writers.
Wendy and I write a newsletter on Substack. It's a weekly roundup of thoughts and experiences, sometimes serious, often not.
Yeah, you're pretty funny. You write about falling down a lot. You write about your dog.
I do. You write about sex and politics and COVID.
All very, very serious things. We have a few thousand subscribers, both free and paid.
And you could be one of them if you'd like. Just go to substack.com and look us up by name or go to our website at womenofillrepute.com and sign up there. We'd love to meet you there.
And now back to being the queens of podcasting.
Yeah, sure.
The Women of Ill Repute.
So are you less shy now? Because I've always seen you and you've said that you were shy, that you started late, that you didn't make a lot of money, but you also seem kind of proud. So are you less shy?
I'm proud and shy.
I think you can be a bit of both. And I never felt that shy. I mean, I remember in the early days, a lot of the articles about me, they would always say melancholy and this and that. And I think I'm sort of like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, you know, like he was sort of the funniest character, but he was very kind of low key, right? And depending on who I'm around, it's like everyone. There's some people that make me shy. Like I'm really shy around funny people sometimes, or if there's a very attractive woman, I might get really, I might feel like I'm Shrek all of a sudden. I don't want to be seen or something like that. You know, there's all that sort of inner kind of, you know, stuff that goes on in your head that I wish wasn't there. And I'm shy about stuff like television. I don't think I come across well in television or photo. I just had a Toronto Star article, which is a really good article, but I was not happy with the photo at all. But it's all vanity, right? It's just this stuff that I wish I didn't have. So there's definitely, I have insecurities like everyone and a lot of self-esteem issues. But I think I'm pretty friendly and I'm, you know, and also red wine can make you come out of your shell a bit too. You guys
so
may
can
know
white.
What something.
Can we know so a little bit about today. All the colors.
Yeah. Women seem to prefer, I don't mean to overgeneralize, but women seem to prefer the white wine.
Oh, I'll drink any color.
Anything, okay.
I prefer red wine simply because white wine I can drink so quickly that it's not my friend at the end of the day. But, and you're a snappy dresser. You do like, I have to say, you have some sartorial moments, and I understand it's hard for you to find a hat that fits.
Well, I have a very big, you know, big head, and we can tell, but, you know, but, you know, when I was a kid, they used to call me Linus from the Peanuts gang because I had lots of hair and a big, and also I shouldn't say this, but I used to carry around a sock with me, not a blanket, but a sock. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it was my songwriting sock because I would sit and spin it around. When I'm writing, I need something in my hand, right, to be spinning around. Like when I was a courier, I would have a pen, or I'd have a capo, guitar capo, I'd spin around. And it kind of turns the crank or something. It gets, but I do have a big head. It's hard to find a hat. It's hard to, you know, and also my weight goes up and down. So I'll have a nice shirt and all of a sudden I can't wear it until I lose like 15 pounds or something like this. So,
well, welcome to 60.
Yeah.
I used to smoke cigarettes, and it was more having something in my hand to do something rather than the actual addiction. Although, you know, I tend to.
I have a new song that I'm working on called Cigarette and Cocktail. And it's about how I think it's really true, you know, in a social situation, to have a cigarette in your hand, have a drink in your hand, it gives your hand something to do. Because they're so awkward, those situations sometimes. And I'm an occasional smoker. My ex-wife was a chain smoker. She was French, you know, laid off their cigarettes. And
it's the law.
Yeah. So, and so I think for 15 years, I probably smoked as much as she did, because I'd be bumming them off her all the time on the front porch. But I don't, now it's very rare if I'm at a party and a friend is smoking, I might. Just, it's because it's a communal thing. It's like a peace pipe or something.
Yeah, well, Maureen does that too. Maureen and her husband, and I secretly hate them because
you can't.
Yeah,
do that.
If I had one, I might as well just buy a pack and like sign me up.
In defense of smoking, which is a stand note that nobody wants to take, no. But I have to say that I used to smoke as heavily as you and your first wife did, and I now I rarely do, but. When I do at a party, you step outside and somebody has a cigarette and you end up meeting people. But it's like you meet the best people on the
and
front porch
talk to them.
The party. You have to talk to them.
And I don't care what anybody says. When you see Humphrey Bogart smoking a cigarette, it's the coolest thing you've ever seen.
Or Keith Betty
Richards.
Davis.
Or Betty Davis.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and that's the thing, that they can put all the warnings they want on the packages. You know, it's like... It's a thing, you know, but there's so many things they say are bad for you, but you can live the cleanest life and you're still going to die eventually. You know, it's not like, so if something makes you happy, like I really like red wine, for example, you know, and I don't think I ever want to give up that, because for me, especially since I'm in Stratford, I find myself listening to records and drinking wine, and it's my record listening buddy with me, you know. So, but anyway, I try to live healthy. I try to go to the gym, all that stuff, but you can't be super squeaky clean, you know.
No.
And, you know, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Well, I want to thank you, because something that I read just really struck me, and it was about cancel culture, and I was sort of canceled. I made a mistake, but you said everybody makes mistakes, and that you don't get the need to banish people. So I just thought, I mean, you do have a way with words, and thank you for saying that.
Well, I thought it was really unfair what happened to you and other people too, actually.
Other people, yeah. And
there's been such a pure, no, but you, I remember running into you once at Trinity Bellwoods Park, you know, and it wasn't that long after, I think, but I thought, and I had never met you before, but I was obviously, I watched you on TV for years and years. And so, and I actually, I don't know if I, you know, I'm Peter Mansbridge's neighbor. We live on the
I
same
know him.
Street. Yeah, that's what I thought. I don't know if I should bring him up or not, but he lives on the same street. But anyway, no, I just thought, you know, when Trump got elected, the world seemed to go berserk. I think it hasn't really been the same since. And the world became this sort of scorched earth, puritanical kind of place in some ways. And I just feel, you know, the idea of forgiveness is such a big thing for me. It's the whole point of the New Testament, right? You know, it's like, that was the message. And I just feel so many people want to obliterate you and kick you when you're down, and they want you to be contrite, but they're not willing to accept an apology. And it's just this sort of weird place we've arrived at. I don't know. I just feel kindness, really, and empathy. That's the key, really, to having a, you know, civil society. You know.
I'm so glad that you're proud and that you've found happiness and that you're performing and you're doing all this cool stuff and you're writing like a maniac on Twitter, which is how we began. But you're funny. There's lots of great stuff happening, and I'm so happy for you.
Oh, I was really happy when I heard I was going to be on your show. And I know some of my friends have been on, like Naomi Sneekus is one of our closest friends.
She's great. We love Naomi.
Yeah. Her and Matt came to visit us not that long ago, actually. And we've been up to their cottage. But they, you know, they're friends from the old neighborhood. They lived in Trinity Bellwoods, too. But no, anyway, I was just so happy that you guys reached out, and I would say come to the show, but we're not talking about the show.
No, because the show will have come and gone by the time. But are you excited?
Excited and nervous, and but you know, obviously, the thing that's all on my mind now is because Colleen had the accident, which throws a monkey wrench into everything a little bit. So
yeah, Colleen has broken two arms and a rib, and broke her glasses, and had a bad fall.
Yeah. No, she'll recover. It's just sort of, it just sucks that that had to happen. And, but she's already much better today. So that's, I don't want to say it's a good thing, but it's the one good thing about it is it's taken my mind off the actual show, where I'm just constantly thinking, what can I do for you? You know, do you want some eggs or something? You know, that sort of thing. So I'm thinking about that kind of stuff. So
what do you think about when you're walking out? Is it terrifying?
It's terrifying. When I'm in the wings waiting to go on, I'm always saying to myself, what have I got myself into? Or, you know, because I'm drinking all those people out there, they've bought tickets, they've hired babysitters and found parking and whatever, all that stuff. And I don't do anything. I just stand there. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't run around and have hydraulic lifts and dancers and things. So I'm always worried, is this going to be entertaining enough? Right. I mean, all my heroes just stood there, but we're in a different place. So when I get all that out of my head, I know that people are just coming because they like my songs and I just have to sing my songs and that should be enough. But yeah, it is terrifying. But again, it's my own fault, right? I sort of booked this gig and my band is great. I haven't played with them since 2018, so I'm super excited about that too.
That's going to be wonderful. You write the most beautiful songs. You really do. You know, if someone's just going to stand there, then you're up to the job. I'm disappointed you haven't got a Beyonce type routine, but
I sort of have a hip thing I do. I move my hip, and that's about the. And because I have to sing, I'm sort of trapped at the microphone all night. You know, so I can't. It's like Elton John can't move the piano; he has to stay there and sing, right? So it's like that with me. And also I'm older now, so people can't expect me to look good anymore. You know, they just have to deal with it. Like, oh, this is Ron now. It's thinning hair and everything. And hopefully they'll be okay, right?
You sell yourself so short. You're so self-deprecating, but...
Self-defecating, I call it. So.
Eventually, we're all self-defecating. Ron Sexsmith, your new album is called The Vivian Line. It's named after a road near your house in Stratford. It sounds like life is good.
Yeah, come see us sometime. Come up here. Come see a play.
Yeah. I think we should do a road trip to Stratford, Wendy. We got friends there now.
That picture now with there's all this field, or there's wheat, or there's something. Is that you, like, in Stratford, or where is that?
No, it's actually just outside of St. Mary's, which is the next town over. But I really felt as I got older, I start to look like a scarecrow. So I wanted to go and find like an old farm where I could be, you know, they've stuffed hay down my shirt and everything. And so we went out and found this old abandoned farm at just maybe 20 minutes from where we live. And that's where the picture is. Because we're actually in the town. We're not, the country surrounds us. But because I don't drive, I need to be in the town where I can walk to a coffee shop or to the gym and all that stuff. So
remember the Toronto days?
Yes, yeah, I do. And I have sort of fond memories of Toronto. But you guys definitely should come and see a play and have a nice meal. There's so many good restaurants here. And
it's a road trip.
Yeah.
Thank you for talking to us, Ron. Break a leg.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, no, don't break. I shouldn't even tell you that. Between you and Colleen, you'd be a mess.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm going to try very hard not to fall down in the next few days. So
you'll have a great concert and you've had a great career and you're happy. It's wonderful to see you. So thank you.
Thank you. And yeah, hopefully I'll see you guys again sooner than later. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
So I guess I'm not supposed to say he was lovely.
He was, though.
Yeah.
He's just the most unassuming, down to earth, sincere, and yet funny. I mean, he is just a lovely man.
He's super colorful and he's super funny and he's, what does he call it? Self-defecating?
Self-defecating. And just a really sweet man. So, we're making friends right, left and center. You know what I really love is that many of the people that we meet and that we choose to have or invite on to the podcast know each other. So I'm starting to feel that we're part of this really amazing community of lovely, interesting, vibrant people. And if we're not, I'd like to be.
I met him. He mentioned Trinity Bellwoods, and he used to live there. And I saw him. But it's hard. It was like with Johanna Schneller, who writes for the Globe and Mail, and we interviewed her as well. But you see people, and it's easier to get to know people on a podcast like this.
Oh, because we have the time, right?
Yeah. Well, and you've sort of thought about them beforehand, and you've thought about them during, and it's not just a, hey, there's so-and-so in a chair, or there's so-and-so walking by. But yeah, I'm so glad to get to know him.
I just felt better talking to him, and his music is so beautiful, and his songs are so lovely, and I don't know why he isn't more famous, but I don't know if he'd want to be.
Oh, everyone would like the money.
Yeah, the money, I was going to say, you know, but he is a working musician, and that, I mean, I have some friends who are just, they're musicians. They don't have to do anything else. None of them are rich, and they're just grateful that they can make a living doing what they love.
So they would win the People's Choice Award.
The people shouldn't have a choice. Ron Sexsmith's album is called The Vivian Line, and he was our guest this week. Thank you for joining us.
Women of Ill Repute was written and produced by Maureen Holloway and Wendy Mesley, with the help from the team at the Sound Off Media Company and producer Yet Belgraver.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com.
And listen to our podcasts wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.